This is Shamira Young with you from Zenjoyable.com, and I'm bringing you our Pro Photographer Interview Series, episode number 15. Today we're chatting with Tafari Stevenson Howard. He's a Detroit-raised, Ypsilanti, Michigan-based photographer with deep creative roots and a vision for the future. As a natural artist, photography became an easily integrated component of his graphic arts background, allowing him to express himself creatively by producing a final product that goes beyond expectations. And let me tell you, his work is stunning. Let's get right to it. Here's the interview. Enjoy. Hi, everybody. I'm hanging with photographer Tafari Stevenson Howard, and I'm just so excited to just chill and chat with you. I want to thank you, Tafari, for taking time out of your busy schedule to share some of your photography expertise with us.
Thanks for reaching out to me. I'm really excited.
You know, that makes two of us, because just looking at your website right now, you have quite a portfolio and quite a bit of experience, and I can't wait to just dive into everything about you and your business.
All right.
Excellent. Well, first of all,
it's part of a wetsuit.
Oh yeah, we're going to be diving deep, that's for sure. First of all, we really want to learn about you. Just give us a general overview of yourself, your background. How did you end up where you are now as a photographer?
All right, good question, and it's really kind of almost a twisted journey. I've had a passion for photography for years, but prior to me getting my first camera, I really was more into graphic and web design. I had, a basement business, a little side business, or a side hustle, if you will. Working for jobs I just picked up, I really didn't advertise. It was really word of mouth. If someone needed a website, or they needed some flyers designed, or they needed help developing a blog, you know, I would help them with that. And during this time, I was having this conversation with my then mentor, Verlisa Allen, about, you know, why are these hobbies and these side hustles that we love costing so much money, you know? And her answer was like, I don't know, because photography is really breaking me. And I'm like, is photography expensive? And she said, yes. At that time, she was taking some courses at the Center for Creative Studies. And she said, you know, even though we're talking about spending less money, you should think about photography. And so at that time, Nikon had just came out with their D40 camera. And months later, I started thinking about it. Maybe I should look into it and diversify some of my interests. And I happened to be in New York one summer. I went to B&H, which is, as you know, the photography and videographer heaven, you know, on Earth, and I got myself a D40.
Nice.
And Verlisa taught me how to work my camera, you know, in manual modes. She shied me away from using, you know, the automatic settings, which was great. So she really helped me learn how to use the camera and work on, you know, composing a photo. And then from there, I was like, okay, I started photographing, you know, things from my garden. I was a major gardener at the time. I probably had about 8 gardens surrounding my house
in Ypsilanti
Township.
Wow.
And so I developed, you know, this crazy passion for doing macro photography of my photos. And if you look at my website, you will see a ton, or my blog, or my Flickr page, you'll see a ton of macro abstracts. That I created from flowers that I grew. And at that time, I was like, you know, I don't see why people like photographing people. I like photographing flowers. They don't talk back. You don't have to wait for them to get changed. You don't have to wait for makeup or stylist. This is great.
I'm telling you.
But, you know, photographing flowers is not going to bring any money to your pocket. And so one day I had the courage to contact a woman who was writing a online style blog in Detroit. Her name was Nikki, and the blog was Detroit Fashion Pages. So I just happened to reach out and say, hey, I'm a photographer. That's when I became a photographer, and I'm doing air quotes. So I said, hey, I'm a photographer. Do you have any needs? You know, I can do events, you know, whatever. And so we struck up a conversation, and she said, yeah, I do need a photographer. And I believe it was the next day she sent me on my first assignment.
Wow.
Which was at Belle Isle photographing a house music picnic.
Oh, my goodness.
It was quite interesting. I had, my nerves were shot. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm photographing people that are not my family. and then they're strangers. I mean, it was just very, very, I really put myself out there in a way that I didn't think I would.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, I started doing more high-profile events in the Detroit area. And then I started advancing, you know, my social network. I was meeting local celebrities, politicians, tastemakers in the Detroit area. And that kind of, I would say, probably put me on the map as best way I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
People started contacting me personally. Hey, Tafari, I'm having a party. Can you come photograph it? Hey, Tafari, I need some headshots. And things like that. And so I instantly had to really start increasing my skill set because I started really getting out of my comfort zone. And I started increasing my skill set by picking up books, reading online. And at that time, I was really heavy, heavy into Flickr. And some of the online forums of Flickr really gave me a lot of guidance and, you know, some courage to just really be outside of myself, so that I can produce products for people who are paying me that wanted, you know, some lasting images. So, you know, those things really kind of helped bolster where I am today. And from there, you know, I started thinking out of the box. I started thinking, wow, I want to go to New York Fashion Week. Wow, I want to start doing street photography. Wow, I want to start doing weddings. And, you know, once I put away my own fears about mm-hmm. what I could and could not do, the skies really opened up. And from there, everything that I wanted started happening. I started having work published in national magazines, things published in Canada. People were flying me out of the country to photograph their weddings. I mean, it just really got crazy in a way that I did not expect. And now I photograph people. I don't have time to photograph flowers. I don't garden as much as I want to. So it's very interesting how things shifted over the course of many years. But, you know, no regrets.
You know, I'm looking at your portfolio right now, and I've looked at it quite a bit before. And I mean, your work really speaks for itself. You have got, first of all, the quality of your work is just outstanding, and you've got quite a bit up here as well.
Thank you.
And, you know, from the beginning, it seems like you put yourself out there when you contacted Nikki in Detroit. And I know so many talented people, not just photographers, but creative people in general, who have all the talent in the world, but they wait for people to come to them. They don't reach out. And that was the first thing you did. So, you know, I really think that was awesome, and it obviously paid off for you.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, the worst thing that can happen is no. And that's with anything. If you ask, the worst thing that can happen is you get rejected.
Right.
Erykah Badu was in town several years ago, and I was actually on my way to the concert anyway as a guest, or not as a guest, but, you know, as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I'm going to pack my camera. So I packed my camera, and the person that was going to the concert went ahead to see. I said, I'm going to go to this box office and see if I can photograph the concert. Only thing they could do is say no.
Mm-hmm.
They said yes.
Oh, my goodness.
They said yes. And I photographed it. I got some stunning images of Erykah Badu. And that was one of my first real concerts that I photographed. And when I say real, I mean kind of like in a concert venue,
mm-hmm.
in a pit with other photographers. I was kind of out of my element. I'm like, I can do this. I know I can do it. I'm going to do it. And it happened. And when I went back to my seat after photographing through those first four songs, you couldn't tell me anything. I mean, I was like, wow, I photographed this woman that I absolutely love. I feel like I got some great images. And I stepped outside myself and took somewhat of a risk by asking this organization, can I photograph? And they said, sure. And it was amazing. It was absolutely, absolutely amazing.
No risk, no reward. Wow.
Exactly.
And speaking of celebrities, there's another, in your portrait section on your website, I see a celebrity right off the bat, another one. I can't think of his name. I know what his face is. Doesn't he work with Tyra Banks? He's like the fashion style guy.
Ah, yes. That is...
What's his name?
Mr. J.
Mr. J.
I've actually photographed Mr. J and Mrs. J. And I photographed them together. And that is actually a fun story in itself. Several years ago, I was working with a fashion blog. And I was their photographer for New York Fashion Week.
Mm-hmm.
And I got access to several shows. They really got me hooked up. It was for the Nyla Report, and Asia Willis was the editor there. So Asia got me access to several fashion shows. And on this particular day, the last fashion show that I had photographed was Carolina Herrera. And after this fashion show, I decided to go backstage, and I kind of just hung out backstage because there was champagne and there were snacks, and I was thirsty and I was hungry, so it was just perfect. And while I was waiting, another fashion show started to set up, and it was, oh man, let me think of his name. He was just on Project Runway. Oh man, Zach Posen.
Okay.
Zach Posen started setting up for his show, so all these models started coming in. Like Cecily Lopez, who I met that night, who had on these amazing Louis Vuitton high heel shoes. So I sat and talked with her and photographed her while I was there. The next thing you know, Mr. and Mrs. J come in. And they come in, they're chilling. We're actually kind of like hamming it up for like 20, 30 minutes. And I asked to photograph them. They said, sure. Then I photographed Zach Posen, and then I photographed his show. Shortly thereafter. And if you're on my website, you will notice that one of the first images that pops up is this beautiful brown woman with this vivid makeup. That was one of the models from the Zach Posen show. Okay. It was actually one of my favorite photos ever that I've taken. But that's how I actually met the Jays. And I see Mrs. J all the time when I'm in New York for Fashion Week. And he recognizes me. We talk, we laugh. It's pretty cool.
Are you kidding me? That is awesome. That is beyond cool.
it's actually pretty crazy because some of the designers actually recognize me and say hi. You know, of course, every name is like drawing a blank. Oh my God. I'm trying to think of the woman's name who's over the FD in the Fashion Council. People are going to beat me up when they read this. But she's like, she did the wrap skirt.
You can Google it if you want.
Diane von Furstenberg.
Okay.
So everybody knows Diane von Furstenberg. And she waved to me and said, hi, how are you? And I was like, wow, hi. How are you? As she got out of her money green Bentley. So that was pretty fun. So my friends are like, wow. But the crazy thing, I'm really bad with names. I try really hard with names. But I run into a lot of celebrities and I see them. And it's something that I struggle with.
You and I share the same affliction then. Oh, I feel your pain. It's all good. I highly encourage everyone to go to your website because you have some high-end stuff. And it's just, you have so much talent.
You know, one of the things, a lot of people always comment when they look at my photos, they usually comment on my color. I am a fanatic for color. I like living a colorful life. I like seeing color in photographs.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I'm, you know, composing, I try my best to pull every bit of color out of whatever I'm photographing. And then, you know, of course I do post-processing and, you know, I try to keep things up there. To me, it just really helps draw people into whatever you're trying to present.
Absolutely. I mean, even you have a culinary portfolio that's
oh, yes.
making you drool right now because you have these desserts. You have a cupcake and a chocolate cake, and it's just they're greens and browns and blues and reds. And it's just beautiful.
You know, I told you before, like, you know, my first passion was flowers.
Mm-hmm.
A second passion that developed was actually food styling and cooking. I love to cook, and a lot of the food that you'll see showcased on any one of my pages is actually food that I prepare myself.
Are you kidding me?
Sometimes wow. I'll find a recipe and like, oh, I'm going to try that. But a lot of times I just do my own thing. I think of, you know, what do I want to eat? Even if it's something weird, I'll put it together. Even if it's a cocktail, I'll just put it together with the intent to photograph it.
Oh, you know.
And then I'll eat it. And I'm like, oh, this is really good. it's almost like a win-win.
Well, I'm glad you document the stuff you make because it looks like a chef prepared it. Seriously. I had assumed that these were photos for a magazine, some kind of food magazine.
You know, in a fantasy world, if someone could grant a wish of mine right now, and I could probably grant my own wish by stepping out there and taking a chance, but I would love to work for an organization like Williams-Sonoma or, you know, or any, you know, food and wine to photograph food or table settings. Those are things that I really like. Sometimes I just get magazines so that I can look at how they're placing things, how they're photographing. It's really inspiring to me. And I think the inspiration came because I'm a fat kid, or I was a fat kid, now a fat adult who's happy and sexy. And
as long as you're happy.
Yes. But I was at a Photoshop World Conference many years ago, and one of the demonstrations that I went to was from a photographer and food stylist for Kraft Foods. And he gave us a presentation that blew my mind. And he shared so many tips that blew my mind when it came to how they photographed ice cream for Kraft, how they photographed and made the macaroni and cheese look so beautiful, how they manipulated chicken to make your mouth water in a 30-second commercial. And I'm like, wow, I kind of want to try that. And I had a lot of failure when I first started. I mean, it was really horrendous. But through continued practice, reading, looking at Flickr, joining Flickr groups that were all about food styling and food preparation, something magical happened, and I started to develop a style. And at the time, there was a national food stylist living here in the Detroit area. I reached out to her several times with no success, unfortunately. I was actually looking to see if I could, you know, get a mentor to develop the skill of food styling.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, fortunately, like I said, it didn't happen. So I just continued to do my own thing. And it's been fun along the way. It's just been something that has been occupying, you know, kind of like some dead time. But I really enjoy it, whether it's something that I'm preparing or if it's just simple ingredients like star anise, you know, or cardamom, you know, or peppercorns. I'm going to find a way to make it look really interesting for my viewers.
And, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned the failure that you had in the beginning when you started taking photos of food. And that's just, it's absolutely necessary to fail. You know, the most successful people have failed way more than people who just have not tried. So, you know, I'm so glad you point that out, because looking at your photos on your website, it's hard to picture you failing at a photo that you've taken, but it's so good to know that, you know, you have failed and overcome that.
I've had many failures, and the great thing about failure, if you know how to pick yourself up, dust off, and keep it moving, failure is your friend.
Absolutely.
I mean, of course, nobody wants to fail. When you set off on any venture, you want to be successful. But, you know, looking at it from a different perspective, I've had many failures. I learned from those failures, and those failures got me to where I am now.
Yes.
They made me the person that I am now. And I'm thankful for anything that I failed at, no matter how I may have been hurt at that time. It put me to where I am right now, which is in a very comfortable state,
mm-hmm.
you know, both professionally and personally. It's just, it's life. And one thing my mother told me when I was a kid, keep living. Things are going to continue to happen, whether they're bad or good. It's about how you phrase your comeback.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I love that. Wow. And, you know, it's something schools don't teach. I mean, don't get me started preaching on that. But it's schools in general, I'm sure there are some exceptions, but in general, they teach against failure as if it's a bad thing.
Right.
But it's how you learn.
Failure is good. If the Wright brothers hadn't failed, they probably would not have succeeded.
Exactly.
So those are things that we have to think about.
Excellent. Oh, this is good stuff. Awesome. Now, next, tell us, how do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot?
That's the million-dollar question. the first thing, whenever I'm, you know, doing an event or if I'm doing portraits or whatever, I think what inspires me most is organization. I'm a highly organized person, and if I'm working with a client and they're organized, they set the stage for what they expect, what they want, what they desire. Whether if it's a theme, you know, expected outcomes, I get inspired by knowing that their expectation is, you know, X high. Mm-hmm. So I have to pump myself up so that I can meet and exceed that or those expectations. So those are some things that kind of get me pumped up. And then I love doing things that are theme-based. So if someone comes to me and says, you know, our theme tonight is Oreos and ketchup. Even though it may be a gross combination, I'm like, wow, we're going to find a way to make this look awesome. So I really get inspired by some weird things. And then from that, I really get inspired by beautiful people. I mentioned before that I did not want to work with people, but now it's kind of like, you know, a passion. Mm-hmm. So many years ago, I met a photographer in Cancun while I was photographing a wedding, and he's a full-time photographer in the Caribbean. And he says, I just love photographing beautiful people. And this sounds so shallow and so tacky. He's like, I don't really like working with ugly couples. And that's why he said, they do not get me happy. They do not inspire me. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty bad.
Yikes.
On the other hand, I try to find the beauty in everything. Mm-hmm. Keyword try. Mm-hmm. So, I try to find the beauty in everything. So looking at, you know, a woman's eyes or a man's hands or a haircut or outfit or, you know, their own persona. Those things get me inspired, you know, and get me pumped up for any job. So that's, mm-hmm. those are some that, you know, on a shallow end, those are some of the things that kind of get me excited to get start working.
You know, as far as beauty is concerned, you know, like you, I always look for the beauty in whoever I'm photographing. And I mean, it gets to the point where, say I'm photographing a wedding, just seeing the way that the bride and groom interact with each other, through my eyes, it could be Quasimodo and whoever, you know, but seeing right. the love they have for each other, they become beautiful. And you find that right. beauty in everyone.
I feel the same way. And then there also, even though you're finding that beauty, if I'm finding that beauty in a subject, mm-hmm. for me, it's still always about composition. Hmm. Composition is key. Composition will, you know, take an image from, wow, this is okay, to, wow, this is beautiful, and I'm thinking about things differently. Mm-hmm. I really feel like it's all about composition and how you pose things. And speaking of weddings, you know, when you're photographing a wedding, whether you're photographing it by yourself or if you're working with a second or third photographer, your wedding party, your wedding couple, they don't know what's going on. They just know you're taking photographs, and then they come pick them up, or they pick them, or, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. About 2.5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I photographed a wedding, and the couple just, when I say just, I mean like 2 weeks ago, picked up their wedding photos, and they were like, wow, these are great. I don't remember that. One of them brought a friend with them. And they're like, wow, I don't even remember that. And, you know, going through the photos, they're just like, wow, you know, I saw the love, I felt the love, this is great. And that made me feel good, because mm-hmm. that's my job. So to make you see emotion, to make you feel emotion, to get you excited, to show you things that you just didn't even know were happening at your own event.
Absolutely.
To get you inspired, to paint a bigger picture.
Yes, yes, tell that story, that narrative. Well, next, we're going to talk about the tools of the trade. What's your typical go-to gear for your photo shoots?
My typical go-to gear, my camera is a fossil. I'm surprised it's not turning into diamonds at this point. I have an old camera. I use a Nikon D300. I got it, I think, maybe a month or two after it was released. So you know that was a while ago if you're a Nikon user. So that is my body of choice. If I'm working New York Fashion Week or a large event, I'll typically use a Nikon D700, which is another favorite camera of mine. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the bodies that I work with. But in terms of lenses, I have to have these three lenses. My 24-70mm, my 50mm, and my 85. Mm. Those are staples for any photo shoot that I'm doing. I have to use those. I just have to. But then I also have a 70-200, a 24 millimeter. I work with a Lens Baby also. And I use those, you know, depending on what I'm photographing. If I'm photographing outdoors, I'll probably use the 24 to 70. Or if I'm using a concert, I'll use the 24 to 70 and then the 70-200. But for my 50 millimeter and my 85, I typically use those for either food or portraits.
Mm, the 50 is a favorite among photographers.
I love the 50.
Yeah,
photographers email me a lot, usually new photographers or, you know, not people who are, you know, really in a novice stage. They'll go to my blog or my website or find me on Flickr, and or people who are just trying to get into it, just photograph their family. What camera lens should I have? If you don't get any lens at all but one, I always suggest you get a 50 millimeter 1.4. 1.8 is definitely great, but I say go for the gusto, spend an extra $200 and get the 50 millimeter 1.4. It's a staple.
Absolutely.
It's an absolute staple. It is so versatile.
And you know, you mentioned that your D300, your Nikon, is old. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I think so many photographers get caught up in buying the newest gear all the time. And past photographers that I've had on this interview series have mentioned that it seems the trend today is to spend tons of money on the newest gear without fully learning how to use it. And I'm guilty of that from years ago. And so it's so good to know that you're using an old camera body, but taking awesome, amazing photos.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm going to use this camera until the wheels fall off.
Good for you.
Seriously,
that's right.
I mean, I think I got it like 5 or 6 years ago or something like that. And at the time, I think it was like $1,700, maybe $1,600. It still has life in it, and it still produces quality images. But a lot of that, again, I think really has to do with my lenses. So I'm gonna continue to rock with it. I'm so tempted by the Nikon D900, you know, the D800. Very tempting. And when I go touch them and look at them, I start having, you know, these very emotional body reactions. But I have to walk away, because the camera that I have is giving me great images. Do I need full frame? Maybe. I don't know. But I've been using my non-full frame, my DX camera, for many years, and it's been satisfying, you know, my clients since then. So it's one of those scenarios. If it's not broke, don't fix it. Now, I also have a Mamiya DTL 500.
Okay.
And I got that on eBay, I think maybe about four years ago. This camera, I think it's about 40 or 50 years old. I mean, it's old. And it has a beautiful 50 millimeter lens on it. And speaking of, you know, don't broke, don't fix it, this camera is kind of like a workhorse. I did a portrait series, again, stepping outside of my comfort zone in New York, doing street portraits with this camera. And the results have been so unpredictable, but yet fun. So, hey, if it's old and it works, why not experiment? Why not? Why spend money? And then, you know, when you talk about, you know, having the latest and the greatest, I'm a big proponent of, you know, telling people to get used equipment. I've purchased used lenses. Actually, I've purchased 3 used lenses. My 85 1.4 was a used lens. You know, when I got it back then, it was like, you know, I could pay, at that point, I think they were like $1,800. Now I'm sure they're more. It was like $1,800. I found it on used through a trusted vendor. And I think I paid like $12.
Nice.
And I've had it for about 7 years, and that camera kicks butt. That lens kicks butt. It really does. So I say, if you find a reputable dealer, I don't know if I can name drop, but if you find a reputable dealer, definitely think about getting used equipment.
I'm with
you. It comes with a warranty. You can purchase extended warranties. Hey.
Absolutely. I've been there. Yeah. And I, you know, you do save quite a bit of money. Next question might be a little bit tricky for you. I know. Get ready. What is your favorite photography accessory other than your camera, and why?
Ooh, my favorite photographer. Oh, that is rough.
Yes. I warned you. I warned you.
That was rough. Okay, so I'm going to tell you my favorite photography accessory. I'm actually looking at it. It is my photography case. My photography case. It's my go-to. It's, you know, almost like a lover of mine. and it's my Pelican case.
Okay.
I got this maybe about 4 years ago. I got it as a gift. And this case is absolutely phenomenal. I think every working photographer, whether you're professional, a semi-professional, a novice, I think it's a great piece of equipment to store your things. I use it crazy. And I did not know about Pelican cases until I started photographing at New York Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week. On my first season of Fashion Week, I noticed that seemed like maybe about 80% of the photographers there had one, and they used them to sit on, they stand on them.
What?
And when I saw that, yeah.
I'm going to have to check this out.
I mean, they're kind of like military grade. It's really pretty awesome.
Okay.
So I got one, and when I went back to my second season of Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week, I had my case. I was standing on it. It was my seat. It fits an overhead compartment on an airplane. I could put two camera bodies in it, four lenses, a light stand, and a laptop, and batteries, business cards. I mean, it's a beast. So I would say that's my favorite accessory.
If you get a chance, send me a link, because I'd like to check that out. And, you know, I could even put it in the show notes, because I'm constantly on this search to find the right camera bag, you know. And I've got multiples, but I want to look at this one.
This is great, especially like if you're, you know, working out in the streets. Mm-hmm. It's on wheels. It has a handle. You just pull it. I mean, I've dropped it. It does not crack. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's super versatile.
Excellent. Well, next, Tafari, tell us, can you describe what your post-process workflow is like as far as the software that you use or don't use?
Sure. I'm very basic. When I first started working as a photographer, I used to do everything in Camera Raw, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I would, you know, post-process in Photoshop. And back then, I was also using Adobe Bridge. But then a thing of beauty came around. Adobe Lightroom. Adobe Lightroom,
yes.
is if it was a person, I would make it dinner. I would do things I wouldn't do for anyone else. I mean,
because it does a lot for you, apparently.
I love Adobe Lightroom. And reasons why I love it for my post-processing is I'm like addicted to keywording. I keyword my photos to death. I think that the way that it handles your photos is just really awesomely beautiful, from the way that you can, you know, dodge and burn, the way that you can crop, add vignettes, you know, play up or play down your colors, presets that are available to use, or presets that you can create, just make things really easy. You can batch process photos. I say everybody get Lightroom. I mean, when people, you know, what are you doing to do your photos? You know, I'm using, you know, this Nick software. I'm like, no, I'm just using Adobe on Lightroom, and it gives me everything that I want. Now, the only time I will go into use Adobe Photoshop is if I have to do some complicated cloning out. That's one thing that I have not mastered fully in Lightroom. If I have to do something really intense with cloning things out, like hairs or other blemishes or, you know, background noise or whatever, I tend to go into Photoshop to do that. Photoshop is still a beast. But to start my process, of course, I download a keyword. The first thing I do is start tossing unusable images. If I do portraits of, you know, of a person, I may take 200 photographs. And of course, a lot of those are, you know, very similar. There may be minor changes in their facial expressions or whatever, but I usually get rid of all of the things that I think are really unattractive, whether it's they were yawning or I made a mistake or my focus was off. I toss all of those photos. Then I go through the ones that are good, and then I go and I do a second toss until I get down to the cream of the crop. And from there, I usually present to my client all of the great photos. Not saying that I went from 200 down to 5, But there still may be, you know, over 100 photos or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And right. from there, they make their, you know, their final selections. And then from there, I typically go in and key up colors. I sharpen whatever necessary. I clone out whatever's necessary, whether it's a pimple or some dust or maybe the lipstick got a little strange. And then make any other, you know, adjustments so that my client is satisfied. So that's my typical post-processing. It's really basic, I think.
Yeah, you know, Lightroom is definitely one of the most popular ones out there. And, you know, Photoshop, it is a beast. It is a beast. When I first started out, I was taking everything into Photoshop. And that, you know, going through 500, 1,000 photos, it takes a long time in Photoshop. It really does. So Lightroom is awesome for speeding things up.
Yeah, and then, you know, the cataloging and being able to go in. I had someone contact me not so long ago. I photographed them like 3 or 4 years ago. And they're like, hey, I need my photos, or, you know, I need a disc. I can just go in really quickly, search their name. Maybe I put them into, you know, their own folder, and it just comes right up. And I love that.
Cool. Now, next, what's the most challenging aspect of photography, in your opinion?
I think one of the most challenging aspects is probably staying up to date in terms of what's hot. Mm. What are other photographers doing? What are some of the trends? So that, to me, staying on top, as I mentioned to you before, I don't work as a photographer full-time, and it's really something that I do part-time when mm-hmm. I have time to do it. So staying in touch of what's hot, camera news, those are some things that are challenging. So I find myself having to do a lot of reading mm-hmm. If someone calls me. Someone called me recently to do some product photography for some books. So I had to keep up. What are rates to charge? I wound up not getting that job, which was unfortunate. But, you know, keeping up with rates, mm-hmm. What's hot, where to go, those things are challenging. And then, speaking of where to go, another thing that's particularly challenging for me working in the Detroit area, trying to find new places to go to photograph people on the streets. I don't have a studio. So I photograph kind of, you know, guerrilla street style. Mm-hmm. So finding new places to go can be a challenge. Getting access to indoor places can be a challenge. So those are some of the things that I face often. I typically overcome them, but it can be, you know, a stress or a burden just to kind of keep up. Yeah. Especially when you're not doing it full time, and I work by myself. So I don't have anyone who can go out and scout or do research or process photos for me, anything like that. I'm really a one man situation when it comes to, you know, once things are over or when things, you know, the investigation starts. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, it's so hard to believe that you're part time, by the way, because looking at your portfolio, it looks like you're full time. Overtime. I mean, you have so much work, and it's so high quality. Kudos to you.
It's really crazy. When I have clients in the Detroit area, the first thing I have to do when they call me and they say, hey, I have this going on, I have to ask what day and when is your event in terms of the time. You know, I let everyone know I do work full time. So some jobs I just can't do. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm dedicated to my full time work for the most part. But when I say, yes, I work full time, they're like, really? Because people see me everywhere all the time. So some people don't even think I have a job, which I think is absolutely amazing in itself. But I definitely work full time, and photography is part time. And honestly, I don't have, with the way things are going on my full time job now, I really don't have a lot of time for photography, which is really strange and kind of sad to a degree, because photography is a passion of mine. It kind of keeps me sane. The work that I do is very left brain, and photography is very right brain, and I'm a right brain person, so mm-hmm. I need it to kind of help balance me just as a person.
Absolutely.
As a person. And even though I'm not photographing as much as I used to, that leads me to kind of, you know, one of my new things that I really enjoy, which is iPhone photography. Mm. So a lot of images that I post online are actually taken with my iPhone.
That's getting bigger now. Yeah.
It's getting really big. And I have the iPhone 5. I don't have the latest and greatest there either. But I'm taking some really fun photographs with that, some really impromptu stuff. And it's actually a way to challenge myself, because I can tell people all the time, you can take a photograph with anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you,
mm-hmm.
As long as you know how to compose, you understand light, you can take a photograph with anything. So I'm kind of, you know, walking my own talk by using my photograph. Excuse me, not by using my photograph, but by using my iPhone.
Yeah, I've seen some really nice photos from the iPhone. I don't have one myself, but seeing what some other people are doing, I'm like, wow. You know, that's from a phone.
You know, and then you have all these apps out there that, you know, have these really interesting filters.
Yeah.
It could be a lot of fun. I think it's a ton of fun, you know, to be honest. And then to post it online, and people are like, wow, that's amazing. And then you tell them that you took it with an iPhone, and they're kind of like, oh, wow, really? There, if you go on my blog, or you may see it on my actual website, there is a picture of a skyline that says Chicago, and it's from an airplane. It's on a very foggy day. I was probably maybe 15,000 feet headed to Washington, D.C. I looked out of my window, and I said, wow, this is an amazing image here that I'm looking at. Everything that I look at, to me, is an image. It's a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of phrase my life that way. So I quickly scrambled to grab my phone out of my bag, and I snapped this picture with my phone, and it's, you know, one of my favorite photographs that I've done with my iPhone. I'll send you a link to it so that you can see it.
Please do.
But I'm like, I don't know if I could have taken this same photograph with my camera.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know. But then there's some cases where I will photograph something with my phone, and I'll photograph it with my actual DSLR and post it on my blog and challenge people to tell me which one was done with the iPhone and which one was done with the camera. So that's always fun. And sometimes I'm probably just funning myself.
And I'm curious, too, what's the success rate? Do people normally guess correctly? Or
they usually guess, it's a mix. They usually guess incorrectly.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, if they're really, you know, if they really want to know, of course they could download the photo, then open it up and, you know, program and look at my, you know, my data behind the photo, and they'll see, you know, what was taken with it. But there's, I'm still active on Flickr. There are some iPhone photography groups that I belong to. And when I go look at those, I mean, the images are stunning. I mean, I've seen people do entire photo shoots just by using reflectors and an iPhone.
Wow.
I mean, that's crazy.
No kidding. By the way, I just found the Chicago photo, and holy cow, this is, I cannot believe you took this with your iPhone. Are you kidding me? This is beautiful.
It's ridiculous. And I posted it online, and people are like, wow. I was like, wow. I mean, I couldn't stop looking at it.
Wow. Is there any kind of filter applied to it, or is this how it was taken?
I use Camera Plus on the iPhone.
Okay.
If you do not have Camera Plus and you have an iPhone, go get Camera Plus. It will make you look like professional if you're not.
Wow. Okay.
No matter what your skill level is, it'll just make you look really good. I use the, I believe it was one of the sharpening filters on Camera Plus to get that effect.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, it's beautiful.
And if I showed you the raw image, it's still a powerful photo.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, adding that sharpness to it just took it to a whole new level.
Yeah. Oof, wow.
Right off the camera. It's crazy what these cameras can do these things.
It's amazing.
Phone cameras.
Yeah, some of the stuff they're making just blows my mind.
For sure.
All right. Our next section, we're going to talk about lessons learned. And it's actually one of my favorite things to talk about. What is the most common mistake you see professional photographers make, or that you've made yourself? It could be technical or business or whatever you like.
I think when I got started, one of my biggest mistakes was being in the way.
Interesting.
Being in the way. That's being in the way, whether you're, and then this is specifically referencing events, whether if it's a wedding, a birthday party, an award ceremony, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I hate when I'm at an event as a participant or a guest, and I see a photographer in a way. They're in the way of guests. They're in the way of a videographer, and they're kind of taking away from what's actually going on. You know, when I first started off, I didn't know that I was in the way. And I found a way to kind of be in the background. Even though I'm there and I'm kind of like a main player at an event, who's documenting it, I have to make sure that I'm out of the way, of the videographer, making sure that I'm not, guests aren't tripping over me, that I maintain a low enough profile so that if I'm at an award ceremony, they can still see the speakers. So those are lessons learned from the past. You know, when I got feedback from a client, you know, I was like, but I was just taking a photograph. You know, I had to get over that.
Oh, so they straight up told you.
Yeah. And it's important. Whenever I do an event or work with a client, I solicit feedback. You know, how was the process? Was there anything different that you wanted to see? Because it only makes you grow. And it goes back to making mistakes and then learning from those mistakes or those failures. You're not going to know unless you ask someone, you know, what can I do better?
That's true.
So I always ask that, especially if I'm doing something that I'm not familiar with. I'll ask, you know, what can be done better? Many years ago, I photographed my first baby. And that was such a challenge. You know, I didn't think about the baby being comfortable. All I thought about was getting a great photograph. Now, you know, because I had to learn, now it's like, you know, the room needs to be warm. The baby needs to be fed. The baby needs to know that they're going to be comforted. You know, so those were some mistakes that I made in the past that I had to make adjustments for. Another thing that kind of, I think, maybe, I don't know if it's a mistake or a style thing, but when we put photographs online as a photographer, a lot of us kind of go really crazy when it comes to putting your watermark on. You know, I have a watermark on all of my photographs. It's very small. It takes up very small real estate. It's very simple. But one thing I don't like, I think is a mistake, is when photographers put on these huge watermarks with these super fancy, you know, typefaces and, you know, other graphic. I think that, you know, it usually takes away from the photograph.
Yeah, I've seen some that are pretty distracting.
Yeah, it's really distracting, especially if they're using, you know, a font that gets on my nerves, like Scriptina. You know, if I see somebody else use Scriptina, I'm going to scream. I think they need to pull it out of the circulation.
Oh, that one and a few others, speaking, yeah.
That's just one, and you know, we won't even talk about Comic Sans.
Oh no, don't even. There's my pet peeve right there. Oh.
So you know, I think if you're going to have a watermark on your photographs, really think about downplaying it, because it's not about your photograph. I mean, it's about your photograph. It's not about your watermark. So that's why I now use a very simple watermark. And technically speaking, I mean, you really don't even need to use a watermark. I do it because I'm just used to it, and it's just my thing. But when we put photographs online, I think most of us do it. You know, you want people to know that you took the photograph, and then you're also thinking, I don't want anyone else to take my photograph and use it as their own. Nowadays, people can clone it out, they can crop it out, cover it up, whatever. So if you're putting a watermark on there in the hopes of someone, you know, not stealing your photograph, you're mistaken. If they're going to steal your photograph, they're going to steal it, and they're going to find a way to get over your watermark. So I think that's something, a mistake that a fair amount of photographers make, something that they should consider revamping.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a delicate balance, because for me, I like to put a light watermark on there saying, you know, from Shamira Studios. And, you know, I do that because I want them to know I took the photo, but I don't want it to be distracting or to take away from the photo.
Right.
So, yeah, it's definitely a delicate balance.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I've seen some horrendous watermarks. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at, the watermark or the picture. I mean, what are we showcasing? Is the picture the backdrop to the photo? I don't know.
Oh my goodness. And even the point that you made about being in the way, that's such a good point. I don't think anyone has actually brought that up in response to this particular question before.
Yeah. I was watching, to further illustrate that out, a good friend of mine showed me her wedding video recently. Great wedding video. I mean, the videography was great, but I kept seeing the photographer kept popping up, and I'm like, oh my God, if he shows up one more time, I'm going to scream.
You know, I've had someone tell me that their photographer actually ruined their wedding. You know, that was the first thing that they remembered about their special wedding day. It was you know, a female, so she was the bride at the time, and the first thing that comes to mind, she said the photographer was barking orders and in the way and, you know, hurting everybody around, and it just, it ruined it for her.
That's not cool. I remember many years ago, I watched an interview with Annie Leibovitz, and the one thing that she says is that she liked being invisible.
Mm.
When she was working as a photographer, I think it was for Rolling Stone, when she would travel with, you know, music acts, her job was to be there, but be invisible.
That's a good way to put it.
You want to be present, but you want to be visible. You don't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
And so when she said that, when I saw that interview many years ago, I was like, that's some pretty powerful stuff. You definitely want to be invisible, especially when it comes to a wedding. And when you're at a wedding, people, you know, emotions are high, especially before the wedding actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the actual wedding, emotions are high. You want to be invisible. You do not want to be seen. And even with that, you know, in terms of like if you're working a wedding or any other event where there's a videographer, it's all about coordination.
Mm-hmm.
You have to coordinate with other people who may be working the event so that you're not stepping on each other's toes.
So true. Now, what's the one thing you wish you knew before you got into photography? What's one thing you wish someone had told you?
Now, that's a tough one. Oh. Ooh.
I'm trying to stump you here.
I'm stumped. Now I'm sitting here thinking. What do I wish someone told me?
Or warned you about?
This is... I'm going to go to bed like, wow, I should have said this. I should have said that. I'm stumped. And I'm usually not stumped. I'm usually not at a loss for words. Let me think. Oh, my.
If you want, we can move on. And if an answer comes to you.
Let's table that one. Let's come back to I really have to think. Well, you know what? Here's one thing. I think if someone told me back in the day, when you're working events or you're going to be around high-profile people, don't act like a fan.
Okay.
Don't stare. Don't ask for autographs. I've never asked for an autograph, but I have ooh and ah. I've been very smiley up in her face. I was just kind of like taken away. It's like, you know, you want to be professional.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want to also present as if you're important. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with making an introduction, but you don't want to necessarily be in their face. Not at all. A good point in case, a couple years ago, I met Kimora Lee Simmons.
Mm.
And she's a beautiful woman. She's one of the most beautiful women on earth, if you ask me. But I met her, I'm staring at her face. You know, well, I purposely try not to stare in her face, but I know I probably was staring in her face. But we actually had, you know, a fairly lengthy conversation. But if I had done that years before, I probably wouldn't have been able to speak to her. My mouth would have been watering. I love your eyes. I love your lips. You know.
Hitting on her.
So you can't do that. You know, no matter if it's a professional athlete, I've photographed professional athletes. Hey, how you doing? Let's get this job done and keep it moving. So that's something that I've learned over the years. Mm-hmm. I learned the hard way. So if someone told me that back in the day, that would have been awesome.
No, that's a really good point. And full disclosure, I struggle with that as well. You know, it's when you meet someone who's a celebrity or even just important in the industry, you know, it can be kind of a big deal. And
right.
So, you know, I find myself sometimes I struggle to, like, what do I say? You know, I don't want to sound like an idiot. So, yeah. No, you bring up a very good point.
Now, yeah, you don't want to look like a fool after the fact. And then you have, you know, who you're working with, like, dude, like, what was going on there? Like, why were you making those faces? I think another good thing.
Oh, go right ahead.
I mentioned this previously, you know, where I said, you know, I had to kind of think outside of myself and just kind of take some risks. I think if someone, you know, back in the day said, don't be afraid to take risks, you know, I think that would have been very helpful as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it took a while for me to get to the point where, you know, I'm like, you know, I want to take some risks. I want to jump out there. I want to ask permission to do this. I want to, you know, photograph that or, you know, initiate a project. So, you know, building up nerve can be one thing, but knowing that you can and not be ashamed, mm-hmm. I think is also important.
That's so true. I think people are also afraid of letting others see them fail, and that ties in with some of the shame factor. But you're not going to get ahead if you don't put yourself out there and take a risk. And if you fail, you know, that's fine. You learn from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, is there a particular photography resource, a tool, or a book that you'd recommend to our listeners today?
The one thing, and this is old school, the one tool that I think everyone should use, regardless of their new, you know, account processes or processes, is Flickr. Mm. I used to be like a serious Flickr user. I still am. I still definitely am. I still post on Flickr, you know, today. But Flickr is a great way to meet other photographers, to benchmark, to find out trends, to ask questions. There's a group that really helped me out, Exposure Detroit. It's a Detroit-based photography group. And I've been a member of that group for quite a while. And, you know, the people in that group, you know, whether they're working as a professional photographer or if they're working, you know, just as a novice or they're doing it as a hobby, mm-hmm. I've learned a lot. Composition, interacting with clients, how to use strobe lights. Check out Flickr. It's free. There's a decent amount of storage that comes along with being a member there. Mm-hmm. And not only that, if you're posting photographs on Flickr and you have an interest in working as a stock photographer, you may get picked up by Getty Images.
I hear they scope out Flickr specifically for that. Yeah.
They do. And to tell a quick story, several years ago, I actually applied directly to Getty to work as a creative contributor. And that process is, I think, fairly intimidating. No, not fairly. It is intimidating.
I'm not surprised.
It's straight up intimidating. And it's a long process. But turns out I was not selected. They weren't digging my style. I was really hurt. And I actually did a blog post about that because I was like, what do you mean? I got great style. You know, I'm all that. You know, of course, they didn't think so. So that was the important thing.
Wow.
But through working and publishing images on Flickr, guess what? I'm a creative contributor.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, I think I've been a contributor for about 3 years now.
Wow, okay.
I have maybe about 200 photos there. So, you know, another one of my fantasy things would be to be an editorial contributor. Mm-hmm. And most recently, they started Getty Moment, where they're asking contributors to actually upload editorial images. So I've uploaded a couple, but, you know, we'll see where that goes. But for now, you know, it's fun. It's cool saying, yes, I'm a Getty Images photographer. Mm-hmm. Would I love to be a full-time Getty Images photographer? You bet. But that's not the case right now. I'm working with the bag of lemons that was given to me, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Well, you're one to make lemonade pretty quickly, so.
Yeah, and I love making good lemonade.
And then taking a good photograph of it. Yes.
Yes. I'll send you a link to one of my lemonade recipes.
If you send it to me, I'll post it.
I will. Let me get this. Now I feel like I have all this homework. I have to send you several links. I'm going to make all this happen.
Awesome. And I will definitely put Flickr in the show notes as well. Now, our final question, but one of the most important questions. Tell us where we can find you, your website URL, your blog, any other products.
Okay, great. To find me, the best way to find me is to go to photographybytafari.com. Mm-hmm. There you'll be able to view my portfolio, my background, and then you'll also have access to one of my blogs. And then I also have my personal blog, which is mindspill.bigbaby.com. And Big Baby is spelled B-Y-G-B-A-B-Y. I post a lot there. I've been running that particular blog for maybe about 8 or 9 years. Mm. So I tell, you know, personal stories. I tell, you know, stories through imagery there. So those are two places that you can find me. I am also on Google Plus. It's kind of hard to give a URL to Google Plus. It's not like you can just say blah, 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 dot Google Plus.
Right. That's okay.
But I am on Google Plus. And then I'm more importantly on Twitter. And you can find me at Photos by Tafari on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, you know, it's been a blast just chatting with you today, and you have some awesome stories to share. It was awesome hearing those.
It was fun sharing, and I talk a lot, so I was really in my comfort zone.
Good. It makes for a good interview, that's for sure.
For sure.
Awesome. Oh, and I see you just sent me a link. Perfect. I will include those in the show notes as well.
Excellent. And then I'll make sure I get you the one for the Pelican case. I'm actually on the Pelican website looking for it now. It's like buried in here somewhere.
Perfect. Well, Tafari, just thanks again for chatting with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for reaching out. And it was my pleasure. And I'm really excited to have had this opportunity.